Mrs. Markham at the Chapel Hill High School. She lived in Durham. She was the manager, and both the two of them, all three of them, got together to plan the meals and whatnot. And sometimes when they would get together, and so she don't know what people eat mostly, you know, what they like better, or fix this way or whatnot. And so it was very much entertaining for them to discuss their work together. And they did that 3 or 4 years, you know, way of raising extra funds for the schools.
When you were growing up here in Chapel Hill, did you have books at home, or an encyclopedia, or a dictionary in the house?
We had that. We had books. Oh, just oozes of books and encyclopedias. But during the school year, we had to go to the book depository on East Franklin Street near the, trying to think of the name of that store, is still there on the corner, to buy books. Or you could get hand-me-downs. Or maybe some neighbor in the would sell you a secondhand book. Then there were a couple of stores who had secondhand books you could get. But to get a new book, and I think at the depository they also had some of the secondhand books. You know, you turn them in and you get a discount. And so it was unheard of to state to furnish you books. All books were purchased one way or the other. Either, and some of them were in the family, you know, family. They had large families, they just passed them on to him. But, gosh, you were fine if you could get all new books, all new books. So that was quite an honor for a student to get all new books. But as far as I can remember, I might got one or two new books, but some of them were secondhand.
What I've heard from a lot of people is that when they went to school, they got books that were previously used at white schools. And so I guess what I hear you saying is that before that policy started, you had to go out and buy your own books.
That's right. Well, I remember in teaching that you see in the back of, in the front of the book, when you turn your books in, they put the condition, you know, whether it's new or good, whether it's good, excellent, or poor, fair. And sometimes when we got the books, it would be, a lot of them were poor, poor and fair. Some of them were good. See, you do that, and if it's any damage, you have to pay for that damage fees, and the page is torn, and usually you mark that poor or fair. So you have to go, when the child turned the books in, you go through them to see. But sometimes the books they got had already said that, said they were poor or they were fair. So we got quite a number of books in that condition, as I recall.
How old were those books that came from the school when they were provided by the white schools?
I don't know, 2 or 3 years old, I guess, somewhere. It's usually the newer books had good. And that just gives you an idea of that maybe that child used it 1 year. And if it was a fair, it was fair. It could be through damage, or you might have had it just 1 year and just damaged the book. It was more about damage. So what I could just say in honesty, that we did get a lot of damaged books, you know, that didn't say good. So that would determine more of the age or how long it had it. But some children just have book 1 year and just demolish, you know, and tear, and a lot of destruction, you know, of the poor handling of the books. strange enough that in Isherman books, all teachers, you have a lesson and you have to use the books. You practice it, you talk about it. Every year when you are issuing that books, and I'm so, sometimes one would say, Miss High Grace, this page is already torn. And we would get some tape or something and tape the book up, because it's good for them to know that, so when they turn them in at the beginning of the year, they won't be charged for that damage. So we did that. I did. I'm sure the others did the same thing. We did a lot of mending to some of the books, so they wouldn't be charged for tearing or damage, for book damage, that's what we call it.
So if a child in a black school damaged the book further, he or she was charged?
Yes, that's right. It was a small amount, 10, 15, 20 cents. And if lost books was the highest, you didn't pay the fee. We'd look and see what it was, you know, and what the book cost, and maybe about 75 cents, something like that. But lost books was the highest fee of all. I've had several children do that, even my own misplaced sales sometimes. Books.
So I'd like to ask you some questions about some uncomfortable things in the community. And that is about alcoholism and crime, absentee fathers, and the things that are part of every society. Did you see this in the black community in Chapel Hill and Carborough, Francis?
Well, when you said there's some things that happen in every community, I think that goes along with the size of the city, your population, your demographics, of your population. Now you take Durham, you see. Durham much larger. You had more of that in Durham. Or you take Hillsborough, you had a small amount of that. And Chapel Hill, being a small town, had a small amount of that too. Not as much as you would find in our neighbors, what's called. And a lot of times we would think that some of the people here would go into Durham and see what was going on there, read about it, and try to imitate the conduct or whatnot. Sometimes Durham would come over here like they're doing now, you know, and do that sort of thing that's undesirable. But what I am saying, we had our share of it as a small town. Then you look at what was here. And what you had was a university town. The drinking was going on, and there was a lot of bootlegging, you know, bootleg liquor at that time, you know. A lot of parties and things were going on at the university, and you had, just as I said, your students had their wild parties, and they, with their help, they would... for good work or anything, they would reward them with a drink. And sometimes they would all get together, you know, and take a drink and sing together with the help. You know, the boys would do all this sort of thing. So this kind of behavior kind of reached out with the men in the neighborhood. That was a fun thing to do. Some could take it, just like my father. If he drank 20 drinks, he wouldn't come home and abuse his wife. You see, where there might have been others who got off the track and became abusive, you know. If it was 10 men drinking, one or two might come out and do that. You see what I'm saying? Small percentage of them would do that. But it was picked up, this good time, this good feeling, and you didn't have too many places. You didn't have for men to go, you know, whatnot, the average man. And so there was some drinking in the neighborhood, you know, among the black men. No, not too many women. unless they picked up, you know, picked up the habit themselves. But it was prevalent among the men, more so among the women, that was hitched on to the bottle. And then you might have found, just like you do today, a lot of people just turn to be alcoholics, you know, for drowning out some problem that they can't handle, which is very common, not among just the poor blacks, but among anybody. If you get so depressed, it gives you a feeling of feeling good, forgetting, no good, I'll do this. It sort of cover for low feeling, problems that you can't handle, conditions that you can't.
Did you lock your door at night?
What door? No, we didn't.
So you felt pretty safe?
We felt pretty safe, very much so.
So crime wasn't an issue that worried you or your parents, or am I?
No, it was, for a small, we're getting back to the size of the town. My early days, I really don't remember us locking doors. I really don't remember. It was so neighborly, you know. Your neighbor would tap on the door and you would be in the kitchen somewhere. You'd say, come in! Yoo-hoo, come in! Because the door wasn't locked. It was that sort of attitude. Of course, the things are very quite different. Quite different. So the neighborhoods were very pretty safe.
And did you play pretty much in your own neighborhood, or did you go into other neighborhoods?
Well, we had more land in our neighborhood, just, you know, we had a field where we could play baseball, and it was more space. We had more space in the neighborhood. We had large yards. Most of us had full-size yards where you could play, either the front or the back. And we'd always get together in vacant lots. You know, you see some now, very few in neighborhood. But they're seeing how important it is now to have neighborhood space. You know, you have some here in Chapel Hill where the children just go and play. You got Umstead Park. Well, see, we didn't have such things as that. And if they did have swimming pools or whatnot, they were segregated in a way, so we didn't have that. But we did have fields, you know, where we could play games or whatnot.
Was there much interaction with the white children growing up?
I look at it, it really was where you lived. In the town, part of town that I lived in on West Franklin Street, we had white neighbors. We even had merchants. Had Betty Hunter, ran a grocery store. She catered to black people. And then we had a fish, Mr. Hudson, called Mr. Hudson. It was always fun. My father had more fun about Mr. Hudson. Strange enough, you know, always call those people Miss or Mrs. He would go across the street and ask him, Mr. Hudson, what kind of fish you got? Henry, I got some of the finest croakers you ever had. I got some small ones, I got some big ones. Those croakers are really good. Just any kind, any size you want. And he never named but one fish, and that was a croaker. And he would come home and laugh about it, say he got them all sizes, but he never got all size croakers. But croakers, at that time, there was a cheap fish, you know. And he knew he could, I guess the other was salmon and trout would have been too much. So he just stuck with the croakers. And he did have all sizes. That's what he was trying to tell. You know, you can get one this long, just you won't need but one that size if you use that. So we'd come back and have more fun with him.
So you
graduated from Mary Potter.
In 31.
And did you go on and get more education after that?
Yes, I went to, well, we had a lot of sickness in my family. And my mother and father, both of them became ill. We went to West Virginia. Now, West Virginia was, what you call it, that was a very expensive school. And both of us there the same year. And like...
You when you say both of you...
My sister.
Uh-huh.
Okay, my sister.
From the first...
It happens, it mostly happens. Your classmates, you see, her classmates, 7 or 8 of them went to West Virginia. My sister went to, she was living with her aunt. See, when my mother, first husband died, her sister who lived in Durham took her child so she could work. And she married when she was 16. So she took my sister. And she didn't turn my sister loose until she graduated from college. But she let her come over every summer. She spent summers with us. So she went to West Virginia.
West Virginia University?
Yes, West Virginia State.
West Virginia
now,
State.
West Virginia State is integrated to the point that you got more whites there than you have blacks.
Today,
very few blacks.
But
that's
when you
I'm
went
told.
There, it was a black school?
That's right. So, it was a struggle. Our names, what they did, if you were behind in arrears with your, with your paying your bills, I was a working student. They would post your name, and very embarrassing. So, when I came out my junior year and got married this musician who was going to finish school. So, we got married, and I did go to North Carolina College. But my first child was born. That was Billy. And after he was born, I took another course, you know, at North Carolina Central. It wasn't North, it was North Carolina College for Negroes. So then my daughter came along, got pregnant with my daughter. That was another pause, but I still went back. Okay, so I needed some more hours to graduate because at that time, I changed my mind about where I was going. I was in secondary education. I had a major in biology. I already had won that. Then I started thinking about it, and I talked to my husband about it. And so I decided to change it to elementary education. Well, it's NCU was secondary. High school. So I decided to go to Winston-Salem State University. It was Winston-Salem State College. Winston-Salem Teachers College. That was the name of it. Well, I had to go to Winston-Salem. I couldn't get it. I couldn't take it anywhere else. And that was the closest one. So he wanted to go back. He, you know, Willie had been in college too. And his father had 5 children in college at one time. And the Depression hit us all. See, that was during Depression. So anyway, I got a degree in elementary education in primary, certified to teach primary. So I went to Winston-Salem State College. Then when I came out and taught 10 years, my supervisor wanted me to go into this new concept called special education. So I had to go back and get 33 hours. I didn't have the money or anything, so she got a scholarship for me to go to Syracuse. So I went to Syracuse. I went to North Carolina Central, and I went to UNC. She got 2 scholarships till I got my 33 hours. I wanted to finish and get a master's, but my mother became very ill. And I wanted to be near her. I didn't want to go back to Syracuse. That was too far away. I wanted to be with close to my mother.
What was the school in Syracuse?
Oh, that's a special school for that type of works. They and the one in Indiana, I believe, there weren't but two in the country who really were tops. And Syracuse was one of them.
Syracuse University?
Yes, indeed. They had a, what they called at that time, special education department. Mm-hmm. It's got a new name now, but it's all the same. It's a school that works with children with learning disorders. And you get the real works. Well, see, UNC didn't have it. North Carolina Central didn't have it. So that's why I had to go there.
How long did you stay there?
The summer school, 12 weeks, and then I came to UNC and stayed there 6 weeks, I believe. But what I'm trying to say, at that time, it was hard to find qualified teachers, and that's why they sent me. I was the first teacher in Orange County to be certified to teach special education in Orange, a whole Orange County. So what a lot of, I ran a lot of workshops. And when I came back, UNC, this university up here, sent students to me to train.
For learning disability. Teaching learning disability.
Everything, all of it.
Attention deficit disorder.
Yes, 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 yes.
Dyslexia.
Right, so the whole, for 18 years, I stayed in it 20 years, for 18 years I had teachers in my room. And I, even as far as Greensboro, Durham, training teachers. A lot of people ask me about charter schools, you know. And the first thing I said, now charter schools take in a wider range. But I have worked with children with trainable children. I worked with children who have behavior disorders. And I've worked with even with exceptional talented children. I've worked with three or four different kinds. I said the charter schools, I said some of them are really on the right track. But I think what is needed most is well-trained teachers. Just that you've got to know what you're doing, what approaches. But
I wish we had time to go into that a little more, and maybe we will.
Right. You have more now than you ever had. See, people are special, going in all specialties, just like doctors.
I wanted to get on to talk about Lincoln High School. Now, I know you didn't teach there, but I also know that you were in teaching and that you were in the community, mm-hmm. active in the community. And so you must have some impressions about what Lincoln High School was and the teachers there and the attitudes there. And I wonder if you could just take off and talk about Lincoln High School.
I was at Lincoln High School for 10 years. Yes,
well,
indeed.
Pardon me.
I was with Mr. MacDougall.
Uh-huh. Well, tell me about
that. I was under Mr. MacDougall and Mr. Peace.
Mr. Peace was the principal at Northside.
At Northside, right. Okay. So it's the building, I'm saying, the building itself. I was in that building. Mr. MacDougall, I've talked with Mr. MacDougall in 46. And Mr. MacDougall was a good disciplinarian. And what had happened before Mr. MacDougall came, that was a lot of looseness and students of roaming around on the streets, anything, trying to imitate, I guess, the college people, you know. And the behavior problems, they were just out of, kids seemed to have been out of tune. And I think with that when they hired Mr. MacDougall, he'd had an overall picture of just what had happened, you know, what they need, more restrictions of students leaving, of students getting down to the work. So when he came in, I think some parents might, some students, exactly, might have the idea, since they had all that looseness before, that he was really very strict.
Now, Now, he came as principal?
Yes.
At Northside?
Yes. No, at Lincoln High.
Lincoln High.
Right.
While it was still at Northside.
Yes. But I
changed the name from Orange County to school.
When I started substituting, it was, when Mr. McDougal was teaching there, it was Orange County Training School. And I did a lot of substitute. You know, I substitute in the county, Orange County, for 2 years. And that's why I was trying to tell you when I, before, when I was working, see what I did, when I was substituting, I didn't get but $10 a day, $10 a week. And I, that wasn't enough for me to go back to school. I just couldn't do that. So then I stopped substituting and went to the university where I get a steady salary. Because, see, they called in a substitute. The longest I did substitute was about 6 weeks. The lady had an appendectomy. And I substituted for about 6 weeks. But, see, usually a substitute might be for a day, you know, 2 days, three.
So Mr. McDougal came as principal or started teaching, not as a principal.
Yes, you are right. Not as a, when he came there, he was not a, he was a, he was in math and science.
Uh-huh. And how, when was that and how long did he teach?
Well, that's just it. Giving you the exact dates, I don't think I could do it, you know, right offhand. But it was in the 30s,
uh-huh.
Definitely in the 30s. It was in the 30s when he came as a teacher.
And he became principal when?
That's, I don't know the date of that, the exact date when he became principal. It could have been in the 40s, I'm not sure, or late 30s.
So he became principal of Lincoln, of Orange County Training School?
Yeah, they changed the name of it. They changed it from Orange County Training School to Lincoln High.
Did he have any other training except...
Oh, yes. He went to some... one summer I went with him to summer school. I rode with him over here in North Carolina Central. Yes, he... principals, you know, for principals.
Did he have a master's degree or a PhD?
I know he didn't have a PhD. He might have had a master's degree because he and his wife went to New York University. And she got hers, and I'm sure he probably got his, too.
So he changed the attitude of the school.
Very much so. He was, because he was more concerned about student behavior and hitting the books, you know, really getting down to it. Yeah, it brought a lot of dignity and respect from parents, a lot of respect from parents. And I enjoyed working under Mr. McDougal.
How did he affect the teaching or the teachers? And because if there was this laxness before, it must have been in part the teachers who were lax, as well as the previous principal. So,
well, it wasn't so much the teachers being lax, you know, it was more the structure of the students. The students were a little kind of getting out of hand, you know, just need to. There was a lot of movement without of the environs of the school, you know what I mean? A lot of going into town and whatnot. Now, they were doing that also at the high school later on. You know, students getting in their cars and going out, but these students, didn't go with cars, they just walked, you know.
From the north side?
To the town.
Uh-huh.
Well, what I'm trying, he brought more structure there, you know, structuring and getting rid of the little unnecessary things that were going on, the sort of...
What about smoking?
Better organization.
Smoking or alcohol? Or
I can't remember too much of that being done. I really don't. But he began to tighten up the loose ends, you know, and whatnot, and put it in a more structured behavioral special, that doing that in conduct. He was, I wish his wife could talk, too. She's, I don't know where, Miss McDougal. She would tell you a lot, you know, about the school.
What What effect did he have on the teachers?
We respected his program, you know, and went along with it. And we had opportunity to be a part of the planning, you know, suggestions and whatnot. He had an open mind in that way. But knowing the previous history of what was happening, that the school board wasn't satisfied, made him to catch hold of the reins, just maybe a little tighter, you know. And sometimes even the students or maybe teachers thought maybe just a little bit too strong, but it was what we needed.
How did you know that the school board wasn't satisfied?
I don't remember whether the principal was hired, fired, or he left on his own. I'm not too sure about that. But the one before Mr. McDougal was a little too lax. And I think that's what they wanted, some to put them in the children. This is my thinking, or what I think that happened. Might have been other reasons. It could have been other reasons, but.
What was the feeling about Lincoln High School when it was moved to Merritt Mill Road in 1951? How did the community relate to this school?
Wonderful. You had, good heavens, you had everything. Space, better school. More equipment. It was all of it was just wonderful. Very accepting of moving, you know, to a new building. That's everybody. When you go into a building and you see what they have and what over there comparing them, you know, they were very pleased with the spaciousness and the equipment and everything at the Lincoln High School. Now, my daughter complained because she had to walk. You had to be in such a radius, you know, the town before you could ride the school buses. But I know she walked.
She walked from here?
To Merritt Mill, down to Merritt Mill Road. She sure did.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, she walked it.
Right past the white school.
There you are. That's right, exactly. But being young, well, they had strong legs, and then I think they had the feeling, you own this. This is ours. Something to be proud of. This is our school. And I don't think they even at that time thought too much about desegregating. That was in the 50s, I'm sure, but they weren't hip to that. They had school pride, very strong. In the 50s, the kids really were very proud and strong. They were proud of their band, they were proud of their program. They were proud of the athletic department, you might say. And they really had school pride. And the students seemed to have been doing much, and along with the parents, they had a lot of support from them and other agencies, too. What do you always do when you see your children doing well and you are open to being a part of it, to helping?
How did the parents support the school? And you mentioned other agencies. Could you address that also?
Well, you have, just like you do now, you have a lot of the groups who were interested in helping children, maybe with summer school programs and different things like that. So many churches involved and trying to help the children, trying to help them in different departments and raising money. I'm telling you, it's always raising money, forever.
Who raised the
That's
money?
That's it, everybody.
Was it through the PTA or was it through
Yes,
the
through the It was community effort and the PTA. I remember even at Lincoln High, the athletic department, because I was on that committee, we were selling fruit and crackers, you know, not candy, to the children. We sold those at lunch, at the recess and lunch pier.
And what did you do with that money?
That was for the recreation department, athletic department.
And what did you do?
Well, it was for the athletic department, you know, when they had to go off on trips or maybe the band or whatnot, you know. And just as I said, everybody was doing it then. The white and the black schools were all just constantly raising money, Centurion, support different programs in the school, buy equipment. You had to do a lot of that. That's why you had the school foundation. I've been on that board, the monies that they're not going to get from county commissioner. Most of the county commission is for construction, you know. And you need other programs in the school that needs financial support. So a lot of schools, we really were at our nose to the grind in that type of support. And it will always be, I'm sure. Kids want to go, bands want to go out of town, you got to raise money for that, you know. For instructional supplies and the county commissioners and construction of buildings, mostly don't care. Of course, the state throws in a couple of pennies now and then. Not enough. Well, they have so many, I grant them, they do, they are just overloaded.
What were the PTA meetings like? I assume that you went to them when your kids were in school.
Yes, the same, whatever was needed, you know, maybe the playground needed some equipment, you know, things like that. They need something in the libraries or something. They were very supportive in doing that. And maybe the children, just like our group, a little elementary course, wanted to go sing at the Hillsboro or Durham or whatnot, and they financed things like that. They financially, and they helped with the students and chaperone and our programs, just wherever they were needed, you know. And it was a total effort of the whole group. Just
so a lot of people attended the PTA meeting?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Now, were those meetings run by committees, or was it a group kind of vote when you had to decide on something? Would a committee come back and...
Well, you're just like any other organization. You always had your president, you know, and you invite your officers, and then your committees, and working on certain things that the school needs. Might be one of band uniforms, you know, something like that. So they were always available, supportive in school programs, you know, what we wanted to do. Things that need to be done that wouldn't get any other way.
I don't think I made myself quite clear. One of the comments that I've heard other people I've interviewed make is that when the schools were integrated, some of the blacks would go to the PTA meetings, they felt that they were run differently from the PTA meetings at Lincoln High School, that they were run by committee and decisions were already made and they just raised their hand and said, yeah, I agree. Whereas they felt that the decisions were made differently at the mm-hmm. PTA of Lincoln High School. I wonder if you can remember that or address that at all.
Well, let's look at it this way. You're dealing with a different situation. In first place, I never felt that the schools were desegregated. They were not integrated in the truest sense. They were desegregated, number one. Number two, it's a different ball game. You're dealing with different people, a lot of them in professional. And you're dealing with a large population of students, people with different ideas. There, at the old school, you said a few children, a few parents. It's nothing as vast as large, not as many problems. You got all kind of problems now. You need all those committees. You've children doing everything in the schools, drugs. All of that you're dealing with, it's all of these things. So the more problems you have in the school, the more committees you'll need. Well, I look at it. It's a different world. It's a different situation. you can easily get lost. And the only thing, I don't know how many in the new situation, I don't know how many blacks are on the committees. Now, you had one problem with their student harassment one time. I think they had a committee for that, didn't they? You see, you have different kind of problems that come up in the school. Quite naturally, you're going to have different kind of committee. We never had any committees on student harassment or the problem of that. Such a, that it got out of hand, what I'm trying to say. We never had one on drugs in the school. You see what I'm saying? So the more problems you have, the more committees you're going to have. I can see that. Then you got a large student population, about 1,000 children. Well, you got about 300 or 400 or whatnot, or 600, not over, you're dealing with. So it makes a lot of difference in your student enrollment and your parent, the people who are there, and their concerns. You have just as many or more white children involved in drugs and smoking than you do black. So that might be one of the reasons. So you have to take in the total picture. And what I really don't know what the setup is at the high school. It might be that parents don't feel like, black parents don't feel like they have that problem and they're left out of the committees or whatever goes on. Or whatever. But what I'm trying to say, in most of our town organizations, there's always a lot of effort made to involve black people. And sometimes I stay in one overtime over and over again because they're having difficulty of trying to get a fair representation. So I don't know who is involved in what, just what's going on. But one thing that I would like to see, and I'm really honest about it, is see more attendance of black parents at these meetings. And to me, your excuse might be a little feeble. I don't know. I see it that way. If you're concerned about it, just like I said so many times, get a spokesperson. 50 of you go there, they know you mean business. 20 black people go there representing the same cause. They will look up and say, here, we have a problem. These people are concerned. That's why I say attendance, a show of faces, being there. You don't have to say a word. One spokesperson can speak for you.
Are you saying that you feel the blacks were reluctant to have a spokesperson?
I don't know whether they have considered that. Being a teacher, when we had a problem, we got a spokesperson to go before the board or whatnot. We were there in person, and he was speaking for the whole group, and it works. And a lot of us do that in organizations, not only in the schools, but a lot of places, you know. Might have two people. I go to town hall, and they give you so many minutes to speak, 3 minutes. You have somebody to represent. But we're back there clapping hands. I'm one of the hand clappers. I'm working for the museum. I spoke for the community. Why we needed that museum, you see. Gave me 3 minutes. I spoke over the little bells tinkling and whatnot. So the same procedure can work with PTAs. This is all I'm saying.
Okay. I think this is very interesting, and a lot of it's theoretical. So I want to go back to Lincoln High School and more of your memories of Lincoln High School, what the teachers were like or what the students were like, and the sports and the band, chorus, anything else you remember from Lincoln High.
I call it enjoyable years. Taking in the total picture, I felt like that we performed well. We had the same problems that any school of our size would have. We seemed to handle them well. There was a love of students and respect among to their teachers. And we, in turn, I know most of us tried to do, to be fair with our students. And it was more a family feeling. you know, cohesiveness. You're working for the same call. What are you doing to educate these children? You want this to be the best school, do the best that they can. You had that feeling then. And I was very proud of those kids. I really was. I was proud of all they did. Not only in the fields of sports or whatnot, but in academic achievement, they seemed to have been growing. And the kids were very respectful. Very respectful. And I had that good feeling. I enjoyed those years. I really did enjoy teaching those children. See, I was in elementary. I taught 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. And I really enjoyed teaching.
Do you have any idea of the percentage of students who graduated from Lincoln and went on to college?
I wish I did, but it was rather, I think the percentage was maybe pretty high. You had, you know, it's costly to go to college. I have had children who had great potential. And I even talked to one about it. You just had all the potentials of being a wonderful teacher because you were my age when I had the 6th grade. And you know what she told me? She said, Miss Hargrave, I wanted to go to school too, but I didn't have the money. I've had at least 2 or 3 of them tell me that.